From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome to the final hour of the week. We're going to have a little fun this hour, I think. And for a little perspective on what this hour is all about, I want to take you back to a conversation that started between me and my five-year-old son, Reese, this morning. Good morning, Reese. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, pal. What do you want to do this morning?
How about listen to some music?
I think listening to some music is a great idea. What would you like to listen to?
Adele.
You always want to listen to Adele. And you know what? Adele is definitely great. But how about some classical music this morning?
How about some classical music? Yes.
Who should we listen to?
Beethoven.
Beethoven's always good. But how about this one? Love it. Yep, that's Rossini. But I've got an idea. How about some Brahms?
I don't really like that one.
You don't like that one?
Mm-mm.
How come?
It's kind of boring.
It's kind of boring? It's achingly beautiful.
Dad, can it be both?
Wow. I guess I've never thought about that. Can it be both? Well, I guess there's great art that we can agree is great, but not everybody likes. I mean, if I think about it, I guess Picasso's great, but I wouldn't want to hang it on my wall. And, E.E. Cummings, it's kind of fatiguing for me to read. I mean, I recognize the brilliance, but it's kind of a drag for me. So yeah, there's probably great art. I mean, even Joni Mitchell is kind of like my version of cilantro. I've spent years trying to like Joni Mitchell.
Who's Joni Mitchell?
Well, let me put it this way. Do you like cilantro?
No.
I'm not sure you're going to like Joni Mitchell just yet, but you know what? Give it time. But I'll tell you what, buddy, I'm a little worried about this. I mean, am I going through life not really taking in great art, or maybe even art that we know is great, but we don't really like? Should I make myself like some of this stuff? I'm going to go talk to our producer. We'll see what she says. Megan Mack, I have to interrupt you for a second. I have a question.
Okay.
Great art. Think of something that everyone agrees is great or all the critics love. Could be, painting, music, whatever. Something that everybody sort of agrees is great, but you just don't really get it, or you're just not really into it.
Oh, that's easy. The Beatles. I don't like the Beatles.
The Beatles.
I'm sorry. Beth Adams, I'm sorry.
Not even Sgt. Pepper's.
I like Eleanor Rigby. I can tolerate Penny Lane.
But you're not, okay, so you don't hate the Beatles? You just don't like
them? I don't hate, if they're on the radio, I turn the station. I would never buy a Beatles album.
I guess that's a little surprising. But I mean, I think they're a little overrated, but for you, just not.
Just not my thing.
Not your thing.
But that's normal. Everybody has something they just don't like. Here, I'll show you. Everyone's favorite host of All Things Considered, Alex Crichton. What's an example of great art that you just don't like?
The Bee Gees doing the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie. What would you think if I sang out of tune?
Would you stand up and walk out on me? Yes, he would. Moving on to classical 91.5 host Mona Segetola-Slamy. Mona, what's an example of great art that you just don't like?
Symphonies by Anton Bruckner. I know they're supposed to be great and magisterial. They are slow and boring and long. The only thing is, I know this is not an unpopular opinion I have. He's an easy target, perhaps. But I don't know if I am unprofound because I do not like them, or those who do like him are just humoring something long and boring. My three-word summary of an Anton Bruckner symphony, something he writes on many of his scores, it's nicht so schnell, not so fast. It never goes anywhere.
So we should clarify that what we're listening to right now in the background is not what you just described.
No, it's not. This is the Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis by Raphon Williams. It's very pretty.
All right, we've got to ask news director Randy Gorman. Randy, what's an example of great art that you don't like?
I would say anything that represents the human body in very strange forms that people think is artistic and I think just looks really weird. I don't even like statues with one arms, to tell you the truth.
Rob Braden, our connections engineer, what's an example of great art that you don't like?
most pop singer music, especially things like Maroon 5 or Taylor Swift.
Oh, the haters gonna hate Rob Braden. I also caught up with Juan Vasquez and Denise Young, two members of our news team, whose titles are too long to mention. Juan and Denise, what's an example of great art that you just don't like?
Hamilton.
You don't like Hamilton?
I think it's overrated. Alexander Hamilton. Just doesn't do it for me. It's not my thing.
I hope Veronica Volk isn't listening
She's
to this.
She's probably listening.
All right, Denise Young, what's yours?
Well, since I've come in here about a year and a half ago, I'm really trying to gain an appreciation for classical music because it's never been my thing before. But I'm starting to like parts of it.
After hearing that, I had to go back to the Classical 91.5 studio. Mona, breaking news. Did you know that Denise does not like classical music?
At all? I did not. We should have some conversations. Classical music means so many different things. How can she not like any of it? From medieval chant to Mozart, Bach, to Philip Glass? Any of it? Impossible.
All right, I get it. Pretty much everybody's got their thing. Maybe we'll talk about that this hour. We'll have some great guests talking about what they don't sort of get. But, you know, I mean, what we're talking about is still universally accepted great art that people just don't get or like. I mean, it's not like we're talking about bad art.
Right. And I think there's one thing we can all agree on.
I think you're right.
I think everyone dislikes this.
That's it. No more Mr. Nice Duck.
Howard the Duck.
Maybe the worst movie ever. At least we are not talking about Howard the Duck this hour. Okay, so we've got the stage set now for a great discussion with our guests. And I want to thank, by the way, Brian Koppelman, who is the creator of the show Billions, along with executive producer of Ocean's 13, Rounders. It was his idea. He jumped on Twitter last week and just kind of started rolling with this. And my goodness, things got a little heated. So I said, what a fun way to end the week. Let's talk about art that we know is great, but we just don't really like that much. And I've got a great series of guests here. Jeff Spivak is arts reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle.
And a cilantro lover, by the way.
And a cilantro lover. I've come around on it, see? So I can get there on Joni Mitchell, too.
Learning you.
I will get there. Thank you for being here, Jeff. David Timmons is a local musician and has been a tour manager as well. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me again.
Ruben Tapp is artistic director of Maplewood Performing Arts Center and founding member of the Bronze Collective. Ruben, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
And Olivia Kim is the owner of Olivia Kim Studio. She's a figurative sculptor, and Randy Gorman's going to learn to love her work as well. Thank you for being here, Olivia.
Yes, you will. Thank you.
Let's go around the table. Jeff, you know, what's top of your list when the question comes up? You know, great art that you just, you know, you can recognize it's probably great. It's just not really for you.
Well, yeah, the list is long.
Yes.
But first of all, let me just say that I am thrilled that like people like Barry Manilow exist. Just if people are out there enjoying things, I really don't care if it's not measuring up. Dan Brown novels, fine, go for it. You know, I think people should be enjoying the arts at any level they can get to.
You're saying Dan Brown novels is the literary equivalent of Barry Manilow?
Just a notch above Harry Potter, yeah.
What?
See, look, we are going to fight this hour. Go ahead, though. Go ahead.
But yeah, if you want to start, like, say, start with music, you know, you open a can of worms with Rush or Kiss, rock and roll Hall of Fame bands that. I just can't explain. You know, I understand Rush, three great musicians, but, you know, Geddy Lee's vocals.
Not a fan of Geddy.
Insectoid kind of a whine.
Insectoid.
Yeah, and themes that are kind of cheesy science fiction. You know, if you're going to try to jam a nice, strong science fiction concept into a 5-minute, 3-minute pop song, you're just not going to make it. And that's, to me, is always the issue of having Rush. And it was Kiss. I think the best thing I can do is rely on what Steve Earle said at a conference I was at once. And Kiss, you know, went through a kind of a metamorphosis where they suddenly became important, and people say, wow, Kiss was a really great band now that I think about it. And Steve Earle came out to this conference and said, You know, Kiss never was good. Kiss is not good, and Kiss never will be good. And that's the way I feel about it. You got to... Gene Simmons, just... I've interviewed him twice.
I mean, do you find him insufferable?
Horrible person.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. You know, you say horrible person. You find him insufferable. Does that color your opinion of the band?
Of course it does, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, because that's who they are.
So there's a couple examples. And listeners, by the way, as you hear examples from our panel and you want to share yours, that's great. If you want to defend anybody, we got some defenders of Hamilton, Joni Mitchell, Cilantro. Jeff Spivak already took up for Cilantro, which he loves. You know, so... He's right about that. Kiss, though, Rush, very interesting. We should also, once we kind of go around with one round with our panelists, talk about how we kind of define what great art is. I mean, somebody said, well, Dave Matthews Band. And I said, whoa. I said great art. You know, so I don't know if they're making the cut. Rob Braden said Taylor Swift and Maroon 5. Come on, great? Come on. Popular, yes. So let's stay in music for a second. David Timmons, for you. What's the answer here for great art that just, you know, it's really not for you?
I'm going to go pretty broad in music and say there's a broad spectrum of the musicals world that I know it's awesome, but I can't get there.
You don't enjoy it. You can appreciate the quality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's confusing more than anything to me.
He doesn't like happy endings.
I love so much about it, but... I'll just be sitting there and, like, I'll turn to my wife, and I think the thing that I say the most is, like, why are they singing like that? You know, it's just, like, this incredibly animated, like...
A lot of affectation?
Yeah. And so, like, and a touch of artifice happening in there as well, where, like, the music world that I come from enjoying is all very much so not that style of singing.
So what's an example of a musical that's in that category where you say, why are you doing that?
Well, even the stuff that I've enjoyed, like that I go and see and I've enjoyed, there's always a hint of it in there. And I don't want to pile on to the Hamilton thing, but there's a lot of moments in Hamilton where that kind of thing comes up too.
Wow. So you're on the anti-Hamilton, or at least, okay.
I would go see it for sure.
What do you think about Hands on a Hard Body?
So my wife and I were listening to that recently, right?
So I heard.
And she told me that Trey Anastasio from Fish was heavily involved in that. And it just, like, then things made even less sense to me. Like, if he was composing the music for this, it's like, I know what his music sounds like. And then there was this other thing that he was doing for Hands on a Hard Body. And it wasn't computing.
All right, so largely David Stan in the musical world. Okay. Ruben Tapp, Artistic Director of Maplewood Performing Arts Center and founding member of the Bronze Collective. What direction are you going in? With art that's great, but you don't really do it.
So I'd probably say film. So I'd be in film.
Okay.
In the film area. So probably one that a lot of people would disagree on would be going back, The Wizard of Oz. Took me a long time, and a lot of people like it. Took me a long time to even watch the whole thing of it, the entire movie, because like it dragged on for me so much. It was just really slow. Didn't really like a lot of it. Another one would be American Beauty. You remember that from
a while
back?
Kevin Spacey film.
And I when I saw that, I couldn't really relate and understand what was the greatness about it. Some of the pictures they were put forth, but aside from that, the story, it just didn't do anything for me. And after I watched it, I was thinking to myself, this is what everyone liked, this is what everyone appreciated, this is what just stopped the world.
And just didn't do it for you.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
not at all.
We found it was easier to come up with lists of movies that are universally hated, from Howard the Duck to Gigli to Ishtar to those kind of films. But the films that you're talking about are kind of held up as, you know, a great piece of filmmaking. Like, if anybody comes in and says Shawshank Redemption this hour, we're gonna have some words. Because I think that one does measure up, even though everybody has it on all their favorite lists there. Okay, so, but you gave us a couple films to think about. All right, Olivia, what direction you want to go here?
Oh, you know, I'm just going to put it out. Your question is an absolute conundrum to me.
Okay.
Because essentially, creativity, art making, goes on so many levels, and it just keeps growing. So I'd have to say that I can't stand up and say I just really don't like this, because I could always find some reason why something is significant, right? I'd have to say that taking it into our present context, a piece that I would say, not necessarily that I don't like, but I think I see it as marking a trend in our current times, would be The David by Michelangelo. You guys know what that is, right?
Yeah, no, we're done.
I know he hasn't been filmed, but, you know, I think everybody knows what that sculpture is. And, oh, heck no, I'm not dissing that sculpture at all. Really, what I want to address is more how the idealization and the conceptualization of our human bodies mm-hmm. today through all media, right, has created kind of a schism in people's minds, I think, between their minds and their actual bodies. I think I remember growing up as a girl seeing images of idealized women that were doing things in idealized roles, along with men. I'm not doing the feminism thing, okay? We're for all people here. But I saw that it really affected people, that sometimes people weren't necessarily conscious of the effect that these images and the repetition of them would have on the general populace. So I'm not saying that the David is not freaking incredible, because I've seen the guy, right? 17 feet tall. But really, it's how the idea has superseded people. So I think that that's something I don't really like, including very general terms here. I don't really like how real artwork gets translated by other means and people start to believe that's the artwork. I'm talking about reproductions. Reproductions, it's a two-way sword. They've helped a lot of information go out. It's helped promote a lot of hardworking artists, musicians, actors, all kinds of creative people. But the thing is, I've been seeing on social media is that a lot of people are taking it as the reality and then just flipping right on. So I'd say, if anything, it's helped the arts, but also if people forget that they need to actually experience art in person, then it becomes kind of a detriment.
When you, go ahead, Jeff.
How do you feel about Stephen Wright's proposal that we need a museum for all the missing heads and limbs from museum pieces around the country?
I don't even know. I missed that.
That's awesome.
I missed that one. I'll look it up.
We should have Jeff Spivak on every week. Why have we waited too long?
That's all I got. Sorry.
Let me just follow that. Well, first I'll say to our listeners, we'd love to hear from you, and I've got a pile of your comments on social media, but if you want to jump into the conversation on art that is recognized as great of any kind of genre, but you just don't get or don't really like, and why? 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Olivia, when we talk about the idealized form of the human body, and you talk about growing up and seeing that kind of imagery and the impact it can have, especially for people who are still in their formative years, you know, there's a little bit of a pushback, but I don't know. Do we celebrate some of this ostensible pushback and pretend that we've kind of grown up about it, and meanwhile we really are still sort of idealizing bodies in art in various forms, or are we pushing back a little bit?
I mean, there is definitely a pushback for sure. I guess I'm speaking more towards certain generations of, but I think though it's still going forward, because the conceptualization is starting to move us more and more away from our actual bodies and understanding our own bodies. Because if you can't accept exactly what you are, it's harder to even want to listen to yourself when you're even tired, let's say. You know, at the end of a long day, you're like, let me drink that other cup of coffee and keep going, you know. There's this, I know it's, all right, everyone's guilty, all right? But the thing, though, is that it's all these little small passes that I do see this trend towards the mechanization of the human being. You know, where people are talking about microchipping and such. And, you know, some people, for them, they're down. My personal opinion is that in order to maintain a larger balance for ourselves, you know, we need to kind of, I personally like to gravitate more towards things that keep myself in my body and keep things in balance, you know.
Okay. Well, let me grab a couple of phone calls, and we'll start with our listeners and their thoughts on this. Jim in Penfield, first up. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon. Maybe the panel can discuss the fact that I do not care to listen to jazz music at all, but I love to watch jazz music being performed.
You love to watch it being performed, but you don't like... Okay. Jim, thanks for the phone call. So, Jeff, especially as someone who does some of the finest writing on the Rochester International Jazz Festival, I'd like to kick this one to you here. He's saying he likes to watch it be performed, but otherwise he doesn't really like to listen to it. What do you think?
Well, you know, first of all, it's all subjective, okay? It is all subjective. So
yeah.
He doesn't like to listen to jazz live, but I kind of get it because when you're actually in a club, an intimate club, watching musicians relating to each other, looking at each other, signaling each other very subtly, changing things. It's a different experience. That's true. But I'd go back to some of your Miles Davis records and open your ears a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. By the way, Tim in Pittsford writes to us to say that Nickelback is the modern-day version of Rush and Kiss. Anytime we can bash Nickelback on this program, it's what we
so
do.
It's so easy.
It's too easy. But he says Kiss proved that they are garbage when they made an album with no makeup
yeah.
And it tanked. Is that
yeah.
true?
Nobody listened to it. Yeah.
That's true.
That happened. Yeah.
Okay.
They went back to the makeup immediately.
Wow. And Tim says, on a side note, I know I'm supposed to like Brahms, but I find the theme song from the Beef It's What's for Dinner commercial to be far better composed and a lot less boring. Sorry. Oh, Tim.
I could get him on next week.
Yes. By the way, Jeff, you have some notes on, you're an arts critic, not just music. You got some notes on some other genres, real briefly, on some art that's considered great that maybe it's not for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you know, if you want to provoke people, Jack Kerouac, I'm a huge fan, but I think On the Road is not aged well.
Really?
Yeah,
I haven't gone back to it in a while. Why not?
I just don't like what the characters are doing. They're not doing anything driving across the country. That's fine, but you know, there's no room for women in that novel. The only black people play saxophone. It's just it just doesn't feel good right now. I like other novels he's written much better.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one. You know, television, Seinfeld.
What?
Yes, seriously.
That was Olivia.
Oh,
okay.
Oh no.
Olivia doesn't agree.
You're a Seinfeld fan.
Oh, yeah.
Get close to that mic here, and we can battle this out here. Why do you think it's held up if you've seen it recently? I agree with you, by the way. I'm with you on this.
I don't have words, okay?
Oh.
I mean, I think comedy it's so instinctual, the mm-hmm. timing, but...
I think it just got real self-congratulatory after a while. And you had to be in on the joke, in on the whole concept. And as somebody who didn't really watch that often, although you can't escape all the catchphrases and just the characters who are, you know, a part of our popular culture now, it just was just too proud of itself, I thought. And I just... Well, first of all, I didn't like the people, which I think might have been a point.
But, well, there you go. So who cares?
But yeah,
it's over.
You know, after, what was it on for, like 13 seasons or something?
Nine.
Like that, nine? Well, okay. Yeah, it felt like 13 or 20 to me.
any other sacred cows you want to hit there, Jeff?
Oh, jeez. E.T., if we're going to talk movies, it's just I don't like being led along.
Now you have to feel this. Now you have to feel this.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and just, it probably not at the time, but since then, it just has become a real cliche of how you make a blockbuster that yanks at the heart, and you walk out of the theater thinking, man, aliens, they're really cool. When I think of, they're probably dangerous. You know, it's like,
oh, well.
just a feeling I have, yeah.
Dangerous.
I did not expect Jeff to go against E.T. on the grounds that it was creating an inaccurate picture of what aliens would actually do to us.
I'm going with the Stephen Hawking model on this.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking would not be cool with any aliens.
He says, keep our heads low because we don't know what's out there.
Yes, do not pick your head up, otherwise we will be whack-a-moled. Oh, my gosh. Justin Murphy, your colleague at the Democrat and Chronicle, says Neil Young is a whiner and self-absorbed. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. A lot of people voting for Dave Matthews Band. So here's a vote for a novelist, James Patterson. Jeffrey says James Patterson. Jeffrey also says Aaron Copland. Okay. All right. A couple votes for Bob Dylan, by the way. A lot of anti-love for Woody Allen, I'm seeing.
Woody Allen, definitely on the list. But, you know, the James Patterson thing, you don't even know if he actually wrote those novels. Because he's got a factory of writers cranking. He really does.
There's a Netflix... series.
Is there?
I can't even remember what it's called. Zoo. That's what it's called. I just saw it last night.
And there's
about
a...
That.
All right, that one I admit. I don't like that one, okay? It's totally unrealistic, okay? CGI animals and...
I'm seeing a lot of Woody Allen anti-love here. Ruben, what do you think about that on the film side?
Woody Allen? No. Yeah, I'm with Jeff on that, yeah.
But is it a case where you think, okay, I recognize he's great, but I just don't like it, or you think, I don't get it. I don't understand why he's considered great.
I understand why some people like it, like his various products, but I don't typically agree with it. So they move slow, and I'm not... It takes too long to get to the point.
It's the same people in all of his movies, too. I mean, not just the same actors.
Right.
It's the same characters in his movies doing the same things, and they're all whining, like Neil Young.
I also see a couple of people mentioning Tarantino. Joe says, I love Tarantino, but many people can't stand his films. What are your guests' opinions on Tarantino's work?
It's creative. And it's different. I mean, he tends to break, you know, do different things.
Is it great?
Is it great?
Is he innovatively great?
It'd be great, but it's the only time I've ever laughed when a guy got his head blown off by a shotgun.
Were you supposed to laugh at that moment?
I think he meant this to have that happen, yeah.
So he would tell you he accomplished his goal there.
Yeah, he's an artist.
Jeff says maybe you guys could mention how much Coldplay sucks. Is that right, David? Does Coldplay suck?
Coldplay sucks now for sure. that vocal feature that Chris Martin did on the Chainsmokers single was just the... I decided when I heard that like there's no more Chris Martin left. The first couple records from Coldplay I thought were great, and then it was just a steady decline. And the decline was fine, but now it's rock bottom, in my opinion.
Okay, but that kind of goes back to what Jeff was saying about Seinfeld. Maybe not, but I think... I mean, Jeff was saying, how can anything not become... Or no, Jeff was saying that got a little too self-congratulatory, Seinfeld did. I look at what bands do over time that don't really evolve and change, and I wonder... You know, are you just congratulating yourself because you had a hit album or two and now you're just going to keep printing money off this? You know, I mean, is there an obligation to change, David? Or should, you know, Maroon 5 is going to print money with every single and they all sound slightly, barely different and mostly the same to me, right? I mean...
I mean, I think that with Coldplay, the issue is that Chris Martin gave up on writing lyrics. The lyrics just got really, really bad over time.
Jeff, you want to add to that?
I imagine, you know, not being the creative soul of Chris Martin is, I imagine you probably run out of things to say at a certain time, and then you have to have some disaster come across your life to, you kind of like restoke the fires. So maybe he needs something.
Jeff on Twitter says, please thank Jeff Spivak for making me need to go back and read On the Road again. So that's interesting. That was a very interesting comment.
He's disagreeing with me.
Though. No. I think what he's saying is maybe he hasn't read it in a while. Sometimes you encounter art earlier in your life, great novels, you know, great works of art, painting, sculpture, music. And then, you know, years later you think, well, yeah, I encountered that early and that's great. What Jeff is saying, kind of go back and read On the Road and you might find yourself thinking, it's 2017, I'm not comfortable with this anymore.
Well, it happens the other way too, because when I was probably in junior high, I read The Great Gatsby and I thought, oh man, where are we going here? And I probably didn't even finish it because it was a school assignment anyway.
It's a short book. It's not even that long a book.
Well, then I took it on an airplane flight and I thought, well, this is great. and very relevant to today. So yeah, you can change your you can totally flip on these things
in both directions.
Allowable.
Interesting. Every phone line's lit up, so why don't we just get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and your colleague Gary Craig also listening. He says tuning into Jeff Spivak with Evan Dawson, and he's killing me already. Yeah, well, I mean, it's been too long, Jeff. You're going to have to come back here. In fact, all of our guests are having a great time talking about art that is, the premise was art that's considered great, but maybe we just don't get, or we can say is great, but we just don't like it. But I think we've all had some, heard some interesting things from Olivia and Ruben and David and Jeff already about what makes something great anyway and how it impacts society. So let's get that break and come back and see what you have to say on the phones next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, the story of the Gold Star Families Memorial, the new memorial in Whitehaven Cemetery. We'll tell you how it came together and why the organizers wanted to honor Gold Star families. Then in our second hour, a special Frontlines edition on Memorial Day. They're looking at four works that look at the experience of war in different ways. That's Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're on the phone, we are definitely getting to you. We just got to clarify one important point that I think David Timmons was making during our break. And for me, it goes back to the idea of a lot of people mentioning the Dave Matthews Band, which for me is kind of like people who think Derek Jeter was great. You know, if he was on the Arizona Diamondbacks, he would not be in the Hall of Fame. And he was a below-average fielder his entire career. You know, he was a pretty good slap hitter. You know, and had a few good moments. Sorry, Yankees fans. And that's kind of Dave Matthews Band. For me, Under the Table and Dreaming, yes, the rest, meh. But the most important question here, David, is why are people saying Dave Matthews Band? Because the question is, when is great art not that appealing to us? Is DMB considered great? Are they supposed to be great?
I think the majority of people would say no. And I have a feeling that the people that are bringing up Dave Matthews in this conversation are not saying, I know these guys, like, I know it's great, but I just don't get it. I think that they just feel the way that they do about Nickelback, which is like, I just don't like this.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And that's an important distinction, right? Because we're trying to aim at art that we can appreciate,
right,
but not necessarily like.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but it's just as fun listening to Jeff Spivak tear apart Rush and Kiss. So, you know, or Seinfeld, I guess. Did you ever like Seinfeld?
I don't remember, you know, waiting for it to come on, like, you know, it's going to be my week.
You're like the student who writes, you know, an essay on a totally different subject that I assigned, and I want to grade you down, but I'm having so much fun reading it that I'm like, whatever, it's awesome.
I'm off topic.
Okay, yeah, no, but it's great. It's awesome. Let's go to the phones, and we'll just work as fast as we can. Howard and Penn Yan, first up, listening on WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio. Go ahead, Howard.
You bet. Well, I thought Justified years ago when a Chicago disc jockey described Johnny Mathis's voice as the only human voice that can make the sound of the fingernails coming down a blackboard.
Whoa.
I mean, to me, he was the whiniest, and still is, the whiniest, unpleasant person I've ever listened to. But I don't have any strong feelings about it.
But you don't have any. Thank you. Thank you, Howard. Anybody want to defend Johnny Mathis here?
Is it uncool to do so?
Yes, but do it anyway.
I think he's
What have you ever worried about being cool?
You're right. It's over for me.
No. I mean, like, you're totally comfortable, you know.
I not a huge fan, but I don't know what Johnny Mathis did to this guy, but apparently they have a past.
No other love for Johnny Mathis?
It seems like he has a soothing voice, but, I mean, it's not my cup of tea, but his voice seemed soothing on that.
Okay. All right. All right, Howard, thank you for that. Let's go to Jane in Rochester next. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, in 77, when Star Wars pulled through, everybody saw it in the hype and so forth. I didn't see it, but in 1980, I said, I got to go see it. It's got to be good. So many people love it. So I saw a matinee, and to me, there was no there. I was bored. I thought maybe it's good for an 8-year-old boy, maybe, but I literally fell asleep. So that's one of the greats that I just don't relate to. Also, in Top Gun, Mm-hmm. Not a great movie, but I saw it as an infomercial for the military. I went because Tom Cruise was in it, but I fell asleep in that. Those are the only two movies I have fallen asleep.
Well, they're making watching. A Top Gun 2. I don't know why, but they are.
I don't know, but it was just completely boring to me, nothing original. But I still don't understand the Star Wars. People tell me it's a fairy tale, good versus bad, cowboys versus Indians. But how original is that? So anyway, thank you very much.
All right, Jane, let's see. Star Wars defenders on the panel?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, Star Wars is great.
But is it great?
Oh, it's awesome, yeah. It's like great in every way.
Wait, the dialogue.
The new or the old?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you distinguish between the
two? The prequels are awful, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have action figures?
Yes.
At
yes.
House?
Yes.
That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Prequels.
He's got
awful.
A shelf full of action figures at his house.
I don't have any action figures. I don't own a single action figure.
But hold on. Harrison Ford famously told George Lucas when they were doing one of the early films, one of the 4, 5, or 6, the quote unquote good ones, George, you may be able to write this blank, but you can't say it. As in, this dialogue is awful, but of course it stayed. You said everything about Star Wars is great. The dialogue is not great. Come on, man.
I feel like the dialogue is exactly what it needs to be. It's like, it's super accessible. It gets the point across. Like, how much better do you want it to be?
A lot.
Fair enough.
Okay.
It almost seems in consuming art, it's a jump off of what Olivia said about how it's people need to experience it in the now. And if you connect that with the comment that the gentleman had mentioned about jazz, how they can listen to it, not like it, but when they're watching it or being in the midst of it, where they're seeing the nuances between the musicians as well as the audience, because audiences give energy to the musicians also. It's a different flavor. And so if you're going to go and see movies or if you're going to see something, it's going to be you're going to have a very different experience in it with the audience. That, I think, clouds some of our thinking in terms of what is good and what isn't. Because so with Seinfeld, you had a whole huge like peer pressure group that was like, you got to like this. You got to like this. This is great. This is look at that. That's so wonderful, wonderful. And if you were to watch it apart from that, without the extra people, would you still enjoy it?
Olivia, you want to add to that? You were jumping in there. Go ahead.
Oh, well, you know.
Oh, the Seinfeld threw you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Like, I like it, I like it. Oh, you said Seinfeld. No.
She was with you until Seinfeld.
I admit that I am so open to things. I mean, like, I watch the movies that no one can watch. That only, like she just said, an 8-year-old boy would be able to watch. I watch all of them, okay? Anything. I really enjoy even the tackiest stuff because I just feel like it bends my mind even wider to what's possible. In a sense, it gives me a context for what I think is possible, right? I mean, what I don't want to be possible or what I do, right? So I enjoyed Star Wars, I guess mostly because I just think it's not possible to think that we're the only, sentient beings
I'm with
in
you.
A humongous, you can't even call it a galaxy. It's galaxies upon galaxies, so...
And you notice there weren't any ET-like cuddlies. Well, I guess the Ewoks, but...
There's some closed faces across right over there.
All right, Mark in Rochester...
Gowls.
Mark in Rochester wants to say, Andy Warhol, he says, if you like the look of Campbell soup cans, buy some cans of Campbell soup, not an overpriced painting. And Jackson Pollock paintings look like a painter's drop cloth to me. Like food, art is to a large part an acquired taste, so like what you like and don't worry about it. That's from Mark. But he says Jackson Pollock and Andy Warhol doesn't get it. You guys...
Right and wrong. He's right about Andy Warhol. It's ridiculous. I just don't get it. All right. And Jackson Pollock, I just think that's the excitement of the accident that you're looking at. He's creating something, and he has a vision. He knows that's going to have a little bit of yellow over there in that corner. But it's watching... It's like jazz. It's watching an accident that you can hang on the wall afterwards.
But it's more like free jazz, right?
Yeah, it's yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't pay for it if that's what you're saying.
Okay. Well, hold on a second here. Paul in Brighton wants to keep on the theme of Jackson Pollock, so go ahead, Paul.
Yes, bear with me. I just got back from the dentist.
So no wonder we're talking about Jackson
Pollock.
I
feel very guilty about certain kinds of modern art, like Jackson Pollock. I don't get it. But even more than that, 12-tone music with Schoenberg and Webern, I feel so guilty about not understanding it. I put in scores of hours listening to that, and I just don't get it. Can you help me out?
I don't know. Anybody on the panel want to try to help him out?
I'll comment about Pollock. I agree with you, and that's not because I do representational art. I actually started in abstraction. So I would have to say that certain types of abstract art feel as if it's like the voice of nature, because I do think nature is abstract. But with Pollock, you know, I don't necessarily feel something as epic as that, which I would term great art. What I sense more is that the painting is just a reflection of what he experienced, and some people care, and some people really don't care at all. So I happen to be on that side where, after I experience it as that, I'm kind of over it, but
okay.
That's it. So
okay.
There was an artist from Buffalo named Ad Reinhardt who was very well known in abstract painting, and he spent the last 10 years of his life painting nothing but black squares and, 5 by 5 foot black square canvases. And if you looked at him close, you could see maybe a little bit of variations and difference in blacks. But his point was that he's trying to create a neutral, no comment, no reflection on his environment around him. And that's popped in my head because what you said about Jackson Pollock, his paintings to you didn't, or maybe reflected what was going on around him, but since you're not there, you're not seeing the same thing.
Let's just say that if I made that painting, it would be significant. More significant, let's say, for myself personally as an experience. When I see his painting, I don't say that it's bad art. I don't say that it's not valid, but for sure when I see it, I don't have this sensation that I get only from actually being in front of a piece of work of art. A real piece of art gives off a real living presence that captures what that artist was living, right? So when I go in front of those pieces, I don't feel something that's absolutely epic that I feel just travels through all time, you know? I do feel that it is a reflection of his experience at that moment.
Yeah, I think that a guy with Jackson Pollock, if you understand his history too, and he was a tragedy rolling downhill his whole life, and you look at his paintings and you can kind of see that this guy was not a rules guy, and it fits in with his personality. So when I look at one of his things, I think, yeah, this looks like what came out of his head.
Yeah, like there's a reason for it for sure. Yeah.
Jeff Spivak, a lot of people on Twitter think that you have not heard any Rush post-1980s.
Probably true. I have some discriminating tastes.
Where's the defense of your opinion on Rush? You just copped to it. Okay.
You know, you can't hear everything, can you? I don't know. I mean, yes, it's probably true that first impressions linger. And color what comes afterwards. I kind of think of myself as a broad-minded guy, but I don't know. If I go to the library and check out a couple of Rush CDs, will that make them happy?
Caitlin and Henrietta next. We got to keep it moving now. We're running up against the end of the hour. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say I was actually an art history major in school, focusing in the 20th century, and you guys were talking about the fine arts that people like and whatnot. I have never been able to get on board with Impressionism, which seems to be a very kind of gateway period into art history. I just like, not only just like the way that it looks that I've never been into, but also the fact that it's become kind of this postcard art that's like so massively reproduced, like what you were talking about. I just could never get on board with it. And every time I see a Renoir, I just kind of boring.
Renoir is boring. Okay.
Very bland for me.
All right, Caitlin, thank you. So you may want to take up on that one there.
Anyone else?
Go ahead,
okay,
Olivia.
Okay, all right. It's,
you're ready. Go for
it's
it.
It's Olivia with the music and theater guys. writers and, you know. Okay, so I agree with the Renoir. I'm not a huge fan of his work, I would say. I guess I do relate to Impressionism depending upon the artist, such as, let's say, Monet. I actually just saw some of his work recently. I think Impressionism was really trying to capture the effect of light and color upon the eye, thus the very individual types of brushstrokes. So as you can see in commercials or in just the media and industry in general, they've really used the elements of art to catch people's eyes. So one of these kinds of elements is, how does the brain memorize an image faster? How does it obtain a sensation of pleasure from an image? So I think Impressionism was such an important, you know, kind of movement because it actually caught on to one of these elements, which is dark and light and the shimmering of light upon the eye, and also how color will change sometimes gradually or very dramatically. You can see it in Monet's, you know, different cathedral paintings. But, you know, that's why I would say that's why it became so popular, is because a lot of these arts were discoveries in how people perceive the world. And you can even see it, you know, to this day. You see it in commercials and in movies, you know, shimmering colors, and, you know, it's just a type of visual information that people remember better, faster. It creates a deeper imprint into the subconscious. So if you don't like it, it's totally fine, because sometimes they just look too pastel-y and, you know, girly, whatever. If you want to down it or whatever.
I think a part of Caitlin's problem is that most motel room paintings look are impressionistic, so it tends to devalue the experience.
Well, let me just grab a couple more quick comments. Eric in Rochester says he dislikes most Robin Williams movies. He says Williams' unhinged comedy shtick worked fine on stage, but he always felt like his approach hijacked his movies.
What about the serious roles?
Right.
Yeah, there were some good movies that were serious parts by Robin Williams.
Okay, I think he's talking about the kind of ramped up comedic style that he thought he's known for being great, but he thought he kind of hijacked some of it. He even mentioned apparently Dead Poets Society and Good Morning Vietnam, saying he hijacked those films in a way.
Yeah,
that
but
was
are they genuinely regarded as classic pieces
right.
of
Dead
the
Poets
genre.
Society and Good Morning Vietnam are close, aren't they? Close to that list? No, no,
sevens.
Eight. Okay. Kate wants to know about the Grateful Dead. Are they great? She says, I'm not a deadhead, but what do you guys think on Grateful Dead? Are they great?
I think that's a great one for this list. Everyone considers them great, and I totally don't get it.
Okay, Jeff?
Have you been to one?
Yes.
It's for me, it was always better outside the stadium than inside. But I got to admit, they're covers. I like how they treat other people's music.
The Dead?
Yeah.
But not their own.
I don't go around whistling, trucking much. No, but I do like... I saw them once at Darien Lake, and they did some beautiful versions of Blackbird and 8 Miles High, and just stringing these songs together. I thought, this really makes sense the way they're doing it.
Touch of Grey was on in the car yesterday, and my 5-year-old son said, Dad, what is this? I said, it's Grateful Dead. He said, change it. But, let me just also read. Jill says she respects opera, but she hates it. She loved Johnny Mathis, and no contest, cilantro is great art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's right about opera. If you listen to Wagner, and I know one German word, so I have to watch the subtitled ones, and the Ring Cycle is really cheesy fantasy. A lot of... If it came out as a paperback, you wouldn't finish it.
But if I gave you opera tickets, you're not going.
Depends.
Are you going, David?
What else
is on? Give them to me.
Yeah, you like it?
Yeah.
Okay, Ruben, you going to see some opera?
I would.
Okay, Olivia?
I actually used to sing classically.
Oh.
Yep. So.
So that's a yes.
Yeah.
That's a yes. See how interesting it is, and Sandra in Canandaigua, I think, had a great point to make, and I wish we had 2 hours for this, but one of the things she wanted to say was, in art as in music, there's a corruption of the scholar, and once you look at something over and over, you might begin to like it more. Mm. Maybe. That's an interesting point, but I think what we've learned this hour is just how we define great is so malleable, and I just find it totally fascinating, and you guys want to do this every Friday? It's a good way to close the week. Olivia Kim from Olivia Kim Studio. Thank you for being here, Olivia.
Thank you.
Great having you here. Ruben Tapp, Artistic Director of Maplewood Performing Arts Center and founding member of the Bronze Collective. Thank you, Ruben.
Thank you.
Great fun. David Timmons, a local musician and a tour manager. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And Jeff Spivak, arts reporter for the Democratic Chronicle. Got to be soon again before I see you back here, please. Thank you, sir. Thanks to John Andrus, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.